Welcome to the Lex and Cash podcast, boys. Today we did a little bit of coaching. Marcus asked me a question about short form, and I said, you don't need to do short form. And if you don't like video, what do you do instead to you can actually get sales? When everybody's doing video, everybody's doing short form, there's actually ways you can make money without it. Enjoy.
What's up?
Yo, been a while? Well, a week.
It's been a while, a whole 7 days.
Yeah, it's just, it feels so long without you, bro.
I don't know if people know this, but we literally, the only time we talk about business is on this podcast. I think like 95% of our business talk is on this podcast. If we talk outside of the podcast, it's usually either just a meme or like anime or like something completely unrelated to business.
Yeah, like last conversation was me asking you for a file that you had like 6 months ago.
And then the other one's like, hey man, I lost so much weight. It's just like no business at all. Anyways, but yeah, so I started doing short form content. It's hard. Making content is hard. And I think everyone listening either makes content or makes content for other people. So they're like, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but my big thing that I was learning while I've been recording, I record on Thursdays, is I'm like trying to find what kind of content suits me. And I know you've probably made so many different types of content and content routines and both writing and video. So like, how did you find like what worked for you and like a good routine and system to get consistent content? Like, how did you know when it was the right one? Like, when it came the most natural?
Let me ask you this. Why are you doing short form?
I'm just doing short form content to grow the agency and just grow my personal brand pretty much.
Can I be like really honest with you?
Yeah.
You look like you're being held hostage when you record these videos.
Read the fucking script.
Yeah, like read the thing.
Read
like
the script.
It looks like you don't enjoy it, if I'm being real.
Well, that's why So I tried like 5 or 6 scripted versions with editing, and I'm like, nah. So now I'm going to try more raw.
It's like you have many stats. Writing is one of the stats where you haven't maximized, as well as, I don't know, others, you know, like haircuts. But video is just, I think, not one of the assets where you are like most versed in. So I think you would make more or like a better use of your time with video. Just, you're a hell of a good writer, man. Right.
That's a good point. That's good.
Like I used to do that thing where I set up content days and I would record shorts, but it felt so fake. Like I hated looking at myself, holding up a phone top to my camera and talking. It felt like, I don't know, I didn't like it. And I have this belief that if I don't enjoy creating it, the audience won't enjoy consuming it. And maybe you don't have to do it, man. What do you think?
It's interesting. I'm in the middle. This is the problem. I'm in the middle on everything. This is the theme of this podcast. The lukewarm take podcast. The podcast with no hot takes. Everything's just right in the middle. We're gonna bring politics onto the podcast, and we're just going to be just in the middle of everything, so we have no actual opinions. I'm in the middle. I'm like, part of me is on that side where I'm just like, should I just like fuck it and just like do what I'm good at? And the other part of me is like, if I want to hit a new audience, and I know where my audience is, right? And I'd say some of them are on Twitter and LinkedIn, but I definitely think there's a humongous market on the video platforms. So it's half, I'd say the only videos that I actually have enjoyed making are the whiteboard ones. I don't know if you saw them on my YouTube, because I just can just like sit in front of my whiteboard and talk for 10 minutes and then just be done.
I think those you do pretty well. I remember you had this 3-minute case study on, you made a client some money. And you just like, you looked like you were in the zone. Like you were actually enjoying the content you were making. So it leads me to think, man, like many ways to score a goal, right? Everybody's got their own way. And maybe short form content is not our way to score a goal. Like, honestly, man, the main reason why I have this podcast is because I could just rant and my editor knows what to do. I like long form. The reason why I feel maybe short form is hard for me and for you is because it's finding the time to record pre-scripted thing, whereas you and I, we work better in flow in the middle of a long session. So maybe that's not our thing.
This is exactly the kind of insight I was looking for. You said it right, is in the zone. I think for me, once I get in the zone, I can spit game. Sometimes it takes a little bit. That's why with these podcasts, I'd say like you probably start getting to the best value at like minute 20 to minute 40 after we warm up a little bit and before we lose our attention span. It's like right in the middle. I'd say like 20 to 40 is probably like the meat, and like that's where all the good stuff is. The end, we just start going on tangents, and the beginning is usually just like warming it up.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I have my Instagram content. It's mostly pictures. It's actually half pictures, half video. The half is from this pod. And bro, Instagram, I find this statistic. Instagram is 15 times smaller than my Twitter. But Instagram makes just as much money as my Twitter. Like, I had no idea, man. It's because, I don't know, like on Twitter, I built it the wrong way. And on Instagram, I started doing short form, hated it. But then I kind of had like encountered this balance of regular pictures and heavy text-based Instagram, and it's going well. So I don't know, maybe you do it that way.
Let me pull up your Instagram, because I did notice you started doing like a lot of text and stuff. I like your Instagram, because it's like, it's not just like regular text or like tweet screenshots. It's just like a screenshot of a text, a picture of a notebook, a screenshot of like a notification. It's so like raw. Did you do that intentionally, or is it just because if you enjoy making that more?
I did it intentionally. I feel like, you know how if you copied like Andrew Tate's antics, you wouldn't be Andrew Tate just because you're just not that polarizing dude. Mm-hmm. I've always been a fan of leanness, of simplicity, minimalism. So it just felt right, which is why I sell with a Google Doc instead of a landing page or a Notion. If somebody's more creative, and I say creative in the sense of the world as in more elaborate, they're like design more than me, they might pull that one off. But not me, man. I'm a simple guy, and I tend to attract clients that go more towards the introvert side, more towards the minimalism side. So far it's working. And I think on another vote towards the create content you like making, Marcos, is if you don't, you're going to end up attracting people who are like, maybe don't like the same things you like, which is okay. But at some point, maybe you guys don't vibe and it might reach a discrepancy where you don't want to fuck around. Anyway, if you want to stop doing short form video content, I'm a fan. And I think you should. And I think you should double down on writing, because you're a way better writer than talking on short form.
I am 100% going to stop doing short form content after this.
There you go. I don't think you need it, man.
You know what I was thinking too when I was looking at my profile is one thing that I love doing, and I don't think a lot of people do this, I love keeping up. You know how a lot of people, like for example, right, they do a style of video and like they do it for like 5 or 10 videos or something and they hate it, right, and they delete it. I never do that. If I put something up and I hate it, I'll leave it there because I want people to see that I'm a normal person. Like, I also went through that. Like, for example, like with these 5 or 6 short form videos, I'm not going to just go delete them. I'm going to leave them there because I want people to see that that used to be me. Like, I tried that. You know what I mean? I'm in the arena trying things, Chima.
Yeah.
Like, I feel as though that's something I do on my YouTube. I've been doing that on my YouTube, even with the whiteboard stuff. I left up my old ones that were edited that it didn't really go well with my personality, because I'm like, I feel like people get the wrong idea when they see people on these podcasts and they just see the finished version. But I feel like it's much more relatable when you leave it up and you show people like, yeah, you just have to keep trying different things until you find what works. That's just a side tangent that I just was looking at my profile. I'm like, I'm not going to delete all of it. I would just leave it there. And I want people to see, like, I tried it, didn't love it. Next.
Yeah. Now you can even use that as an objection handler. People are like, but Marcus, what happens if like this strategy is not working? Bro, I used to do short form and it didn't work out for me. And so we pivot. So what? It's okay. You know?
We move on.
We move on. Why don't you repurpose the podcast? You have so much fire you've spat. Spat, spit.
This is going to sound super like autistic. It's because I don't like my camera quality.
Yeah, fuck off, dude. Like, just do the thing. Are you using an iPhone, though?
No, because I lost my tripod and I've been too lazy to go get one. It reminds me.
Live in fucking Miami, man. Like, come on, you got this.
Let me put my head at the center of this before I feel like I'm like
down here.
I just need to come up here. All right, now I'm fully in. But yeah, that's the content thing. We found a conclusion, and 10 minutes.
But yeah, the way I found out what, like to get back to the original point, what condom worked for me is the one that I enjoyed making the most because I realized that nobody can compete with me. It's so cliche, but fine work that feels like play. It's so true, man. Like, I thought, like, you gonna struggle writing a daily email? Like, honestly, like, that was to me, like, really? Like, that's super easy, to me at least, right? So maybe that's where I can compete. So maybe you have something else.
Honestly, that's so true, too. I started doing LinkedIn, of course, and I think the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks of Instagram, I've gained, like, 6 followers. I posted on LinkedIn for, like, 2 days and gained, like, 100 followers. It's like, I feel
there
like...
you go. Easy,
sometimes
man.
Sometimes the evidence slaps you in the face. But you just have to actually, you know, care enough to look at it.
And it's tricky, yeah. Though, right? Because you don't know, like, there's a very thin line between playing the long game and working on pointless stuff that doesn't move the needle. And often with content, people put everything on this is the long game bucket. This goes in the long game thing. Maybe not, dude. Maybe you're just wasting your time.
Yeah, that's
true. Like, not for you, but, like, I'm talking to the general person, you know, listening to this. So if you don't like creating the content you're creating, Marcus and JK give you the sign of approval and the thumbs up to stop fucking making it. Find what you like, do that.
Yeah, I think there's got to be, I don't know if there's a quote on this, but it's like you have to play the long game in terms of actually wanting to win in business, but you have to play the short game in terms of like feedback loop. You know what I mean? It's like if I did short form content for a year before I decided not to do it, how much money will I have lost? But no, I did it 6 videos and I'm like, eh. Not working. Next. You know what I mean? Like, you got to be, I feel like you got to have that nuanced perspective because some people are like, play the long game and they make shorts and shit for like 2 years and make $0. And they're like, no, I'm playing the long game, bro.
I had a client. He said, Jakey, you know how many emails you've sent me before I signed up? I'm like, how many? He's like, 531.
That's insane.
And I'm like, what the hell? Like, I wish I could say, yeah, guys, play the long game. But that's actually quite shitty marketing, guys. Like, if you need to message someone, you know, there's a thing, 7 touch points before somebody becomes a client. How about 531? That is not good. So
he was nurtured.
Yeah, he was, bro, he was in.
You raised his ass. You raised him.
But to your point, I do believe, I like what you said, man. Long-term in wanting to win, short-term in feedback loops. This is why I believe the best metric to see if your offer is good or not is make it. And if it doesn't sell, then you change it that day and you make another one the next day. It should be fast. I think, okay, now it's going to be me. Alex Hormozi said, minute 19. We made it.
Minutes.
Yeah, 19 minutes. There you go. But he said, like, businesses from the start, they spit off cash. Like it's very rare. Tell me if you've seen this, but it's very rare that I've seen an offer go from really shitty to outperform. Often the offers that are good, they hit right off the bat.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've never had a client where it's like they make no money and then they just start making money like 2 months later. Even clients that maybe even if it goes up right away and then it levels out, it always goes up, right? Like, they always make sales month one or else I'm like, yeah, this isn't working. And this is just like a side tangent, but I've never had a client where it didn't work with us and then they went off and then it worked. They always end up changing their offer or doing something else. You're right. I think anytime we get a client with a good offer, it works month one. So I'd agree. I'd say I have that evidence.
So make the offer. If it doesn't work, you got your answer. It's not that the offer needs tweaking or refinement. Just make another one, dude. It's like, you could spit up unlimited offers. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you like? I feel like people get married to their offer or even to their business. Like they feel like they have to make that one work against all odds. I'm like, there's a quote by, I forget who the quote's by, but it's like, if your business isn't making money in the first 2 months, it's not a good business.
I think it's Nick Huber.
And I agree with that. Nick Huber. Yeah. And I think that's true for pretty much 100% of the people listening to this. Nobody here is creating like a unicorn Netflix, Uber, or Facebook. So if you're not making money in the first 60 days, it's just bad. Or you're bad. One or the other. But something's wrong.
Let me ask a personal question.
Yeah.
You are in a relationship right now. From the start of their relationship, did it go from friends and then you guys started dating? Or is there some attraction like day one?
Yeah, it was day one. I asked her on a date in college, but it was in college. She was friends with my old girlfriend. So it was too like weird. So she actually said, denied me. She said no. So there was always attraction. And then 4 years later from there, 3 years later from there, we rekindled and it was back to attraction. She kind of thought it was going to be a friend thing. And I knew it was attraction from the first start. And I'd say we went from like friends to not friends within like 30 days. It was, I always had that intention, you know?
Yeah. Good. Good. Like with my girl, I was like, you know, I met her on I think it was a Wednesday or something. Saturday, we're on a date and it's like, this is what's going on, right? It starts right off the bat. And yeah, if it's not working, well, send out another offer, because then like be okay with your offer sucking and just throwing it at the garbage, because that is the cost for you to find one that is actually going to make you money.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's always one side always going to have the intention, or else it's just going to, you never really see it. I feel like the movies do that where it's like they were friends and then they both decided not to be friends. I feel like in real life, one person always has the intention, you know?
Yeah, or you're going to need to wait 531 days for somebody.
531 touch points, not days.
Yeah, so there you go, guys. That is the secret. So you guys want to know the secret? Here it goes. You got to message your prospects 531 times before they become a client.
He must have been following you since day one, right? Like 531 emails, and that goes back to 2022, 2021, right?
It's been a while. Yeah, maybe like 2 years or so. Actually, 531 days, because I send a daily email. So there you go.
Oh, you've been sending daily emails for 531 days?
More than that, maybe. Maybe like 2 or 3 years.
This is good content. You should talk about that. I've sent an email every day for the last 1,000 days. Here's what I learned. That's a fire video.
See? There you go.
I have the good ideas for videos, but I don't actually have the execution.
You know how the My First Million has this whole business ideas theme? So they get people in and they ask them, what are some ideas for businesses? You and I could do something like that. What are some ideas you have for virality? So let me be the Pippin and you be Jordan. Marcos, what are some ideas you think could go viral?
I think there's a really good opportunity, and I've wanted to do this myself, but I don't have the natural talent on camera. And I do think there's talent. I think talent matters, unless you're going to hire someone. I think there's a real opportunity in business for someone to come in and be the Mr. Beast of business. And when I say that, I mean big, glamorous challenges and doing them from a B2C standpoint. Do you know Byaheza?
No.
So this guy Byaheza, who just started a podcast really big, he used to do them all the time, like trying to essentially make a certain amount of money in a certain amount of time and stuff like that. I think that is a really good opportunity, especially if you want to sell a coaching program. If you can do it from scratch, from that thing over and over again in your niche, I think that's one. And for example, right? Give me a coaching niche. Like making money coaching niche.
Closer.
There you go. Closer, right? That's actually fire. So it's like, I tried to be a car salesman for 30 days. And you go do like be a car salesman. You go make like a fuck ton of money. You basically have like a good title. And then you go do a different sales job, like tech sales. And then you go do high ticket, like education sales. And you kind of make videos for these 30, 60, 90 day challenges of you making money to display your expertise. And then that funnels in. All these people are going to be salespeople and they're going to funnel into your training or something like that. I think that is a really big opportunity. But the caveat is it requires a fuck ton of talent. Like you actually have to be good. You have to be who you say you are. Oh no, you actually have to be good at what you do. So I think that's a really good opportunity for virality in business.
Cool. Let's do another one. Short form content creator.
Short form content creator. Should we stay in like the business realm? We should.
Yeah. Like virality, stuff like that. Or do you want me to give you a niche that's like nothing, that has nothing to do with this?
Nah, we'll stay business. Like saying cash. I feel like with short form's like you have to get to the point really fast. And I think the problem with business and short form is that business is slow and short form is fast. So you see a lot of like short form in our niche being kind of like philosophical or stuff like that. The viral stuff, right? Like have you went crazy viral talking about high level insights in the coaching niche? Like
my most viral post was me going up to a barista and asking her if I could pay with likes instead of cash.
That's fire, first of all. But that's actually great. This is a great point. Is like, I think the opportunity, not to be vague, is like mixing B2C concepts. Like that's a funny joke. That, using that, but like funneling it into your B2B business stuff is actually a really cool opportunity. So like with that one, Like saying cash is a really good opportunity. I wish you would have kept doing it. I know you didn't like it, but I wish you would have kept doing it. It's because you're an eye.
What? With do what?
Like going up to different merchants and clerks and cashiers and offering them likes, like little hearts.
Dude, that's the definition of whoring out for likes, dude. Like that's what, you know, I looked at that and I thought, like, what have I become? Why am I doing this?
That's actually a good point to talk about then, because the fact that it was hard for me to come up with one is a good point. I had a client who was doing, have you ever seen, it's many people have done them, the street interviews, what do you do for a living, how much do you make?
Yeah.
I had a client who did those street interviews and he got so many likes, millions of views, millions and millions and millions of views every single time they posted. And two things happened. One, after millions, I'm talking eight figures in views, like 20,000 followers, 30,000 followers. Like they didn't get a lot of extra followers. And number two, they didn't make any additional money from maybe a little bit, barely any. Because who that attracts is so bottom of the funnel, like, or top of funnel, like the regular everyday person. The amount of work to be done in a 10-second thing to be able to then convert them to a link click about a coaching program, it's just like there isn't enough touch points there. So yeah, he ended up stopped doing it and he just switched to higher value short form with less likes and less views and more cash. So that's a good lesson on that.
That's wild. Do it. So again, eight figures in views.
Eight figures, maybe nine. A lot of views. Eight figures for sure.
20,000 followers. How much money?
Like negative, like basically zero. Closer to zero than it is what they were doing overall. And this is, you know, this is like a six-figure business, seven-figure coaching business. So that's a good... And this is, you know, you've seen how many people have done these street interviews. There's like 1,000 people doing these street interviews. So that just goes to show you that it's not,
like
it's not easy to monetize. Like saying cash, like that does not, just because you get a bunch of views, unless you're trying to monetize with ad revenue or like a fucking t-shirt, it's not exactly the best business model.
Yeah. I think we need to understand what kind of business model we're playing. You know, people, we get advice as creators from the Mr. Beasts of the world. Well, Mr. Beast aims to go as viral as possible, and he sells chocolate to children.
Mm-hmm.
You sell $1,000 to $10,000 coaching packages. Maybe some of his advice won't apply to you. And I'm not claiming to be better than the guy, which I'm not. But I just understand that I am not playing the same game, and at least I know that much. We can't afford to give everything away for free. We can't afford to always go viral and put thousands and thousands into production and sales, because that's just not what we do. I'll tell you one thing, man. Like a year ago or so, my expenses were $58,000 per month. $58,000 a month, right out the window. We got it down to eight. So it's $8,000 a month. And 5,000 of it is coaching. Like us asking, you know, us being coached, you know, by other people. And revenue is almost at the same spot. Profit is wildly better. So I just understood the kind of game we're playing. Like, I'm not aiming for the numbers or the engagement. I'm aiming for profit. How much money am I taking home? I used to run a SaaS that made $125,000 a month, and I took home $15,000. A coaching business that made $100,000 a month, and I took home $12,000. But now that I understand that I'm playing the profit game, not the likes or the engagement game, I'm making more money, and I'm taking more home, and I couldn't be happier with the change that happened. But it starts with understanding what game you are playing. You're playing profit, and that is it, not engagement. Because you're not going to be Coca-Cola or Mr. Beast. You sell $1,000 to $10,000 packages. So like, let's get real here.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Because with the interviews, it's like I've seen who it does work for. There was the people doing street interviews. They were doing a tequila promo. They were carrying around the tequila bottle. Like for them, it works because they're playing an eyeballs game and they're trying to sell a tequila brand. So different than trying to send $1,000 to $10,000 products and services. It's like, it's so different.
If you can say, what were they selling? What was the guy selling?
It was just like a make money online program. It's just like, how are you going to convert like a street interview? You'd have to do so much work in between from the view. This is the problem with TikTok, is from the view to the sales, like, you know how many touch points you would actually need to get them over that edge? This is also a TikTok problem, to be fair. It's like majority of the people I know in the coaching industry who are doing TikTok well are pushing TikTok to one of two things. They're pushing TikTok to a webinar, or they're pushing TikTok to Instagram. And then they convert them through Instagram and the Instagram stories and ManyChat. And like, you Instagram just has more capability with the touch points, better DM system, story system, et cetera. Whereas TikTok, literally, like, you get 5 to 10 seconds, they never see you again. People don't even see who they follow on their timeline on TikTok. It's like, TikTok is so short. It's like, that's why most of the successful coaches will just push you off of TikTok as fast as possible. They try to take that 10 seconds and run.
I feel like the client you had, another reason why the thing didn't work, it's because the interviews are not about him and his offer. Mm-hmm. It's about the guy you're interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
So in reality, it's, you're creating content, you're not creating relevance. Because it's,
yeah,
who are you? Like, they're not even looking at you, you know? They're looking at the other person.
Well, this is why, if you think about the content pillars, right? That's pretty much the only pillar that touches. It doesn't touch personal, doesn't touch expertise, social proof, or opinion. It only touches the trending portion. And everyone knows, you should know that the trending portion is like specifically to generate virality and engagement and like getting people to your page and your face. But TikTok, like I said, it's just like, it's so hard to convert people. I don't know. Do you use TikTok?
Nah. I mean, I repurpose stuff, but
it's tough. It's like,
has a dollar come from TikTok? No.
Nah. Like, anyone I know who makes money from TikTok, it's like TikTok shop and TikTok ad revenue. Even Julia, she has 150,000 followers on there, and she just is like barely posts on it now. She doesn't even want to post on TikTok. It's just so bad in terms of our niche for business. So maybe that'll change in the future, but we're talking 2024.
Well, fair enough. Okay. What else you got?
What else do I have? You can compliment my haircut.
Well, is it the Mike Tyson place?
It is the Mike Tyson place. This is a $105 haircut.
See ya, bro. Why don't you come here? I'll do it for 104 and I'll do a better job.
Is that what you're teaching your students?
Yeah. It's haircut mastery.
I have one. So I made this tweet and I thought about it over the weekend and I was like, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like you have this down, and this is what I try to get down for our clients as well. So we kind of relate here. There's two types of follower growth, and I'm reading my tweet here out of what I remember from it. There's two types of follower growth. There's viral, and then there's consistent. Consistent follower growth is what you should aim to monetize. Viral follower growth should be a bonus. If you can be profitable from the consistent follower growth, the viral stuff can just be a bonus and a cherry on top. So what I mean by this is, like, realistically, and you kind of have this down, like I said, is if you're posting a certain amount of content and you have like a really good content system down, you can expect a certain amount of growth every month just based on the average, right? Like, especially if you've been posting for, you know, 6 months, 12 months, you'll kind of know how much you're going to grow every month based on what you've been getting. If you can now be profitable from that consistent growth, let's just say you're gaining 1,000 followers a month. If you can be profitable from that 1,000 followers, you're hitting up all those 1,000 followers, you're having conversations, et cetera, and you can make a bunch of money from that, you don't have to go viral at all. But if you do, it's just a bonus. So this is what I try to do for our clients is like, and this is kind of how I, wow, there's a lot of sauce. This is how I kind of took myself away from the whole follower growth ghostwriting niche and kind of aimed more towards the monetization. I try to have a more modest, consistent, higher quality growth so that they can be profitable off that specific growth. And I make sure that they know how to be profitable off that. That way, when we do go viral, it's just like a bonus. It's like, oh shit, we just hit new all-time highs because we went viral. But you don't have to go viral. I have clients that don't go viral at all, ever. Right? They just gain like 500 followers. But they make money. And that's important.
Good. good shit, man.
Nice.
It's like double like, share, repost, subscribe. So much value, Marcus. Thanks.
What a podcast.
Yeah. Fire. I will say a big part of why, and this is a similar process, I assume you do, it's because we focus on audience efficiency over audience size. So today I sent this email saying this email is written by a client, because half the email is just a testimonial I copied and pasted. So you have maybe like a couple hundred, even 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 followers. How do you focus on making the audience efficient so that when you grow, it'll actually continue being efficient? Because what you don't want is what happened to this other dude that sent me an email today with 300,000 followers. And he said, like, I can't monetize. And I'm like, shit, well, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Come to Papa. No.
I mean, this is like, what do you want me to do, right? So anyway, how do you make the audience efficient? Because I think that if you don't monetize early, then it only gets less efficient. So the more you grow, the harder it's going to be. Like, maybe not in the numbers, but mentally. Because you're like, fuck, like, I'm growing, but this is not working. Like, I'm giving a lot, but I'm not getting back. So it's going to be hard for you. So how do you make an audience efficient? This is what he said. So the biggest change for me that has led to more sales is that anytime someone talks to me, I begin a sales conversation with them. I don't let any lead slip through the cracks anymore. I sometimes shrink the conversation window down to minutes. If someone replies to my email, likes a post, follows me, sends me a connection request, or even breathes in my vicinity, I start talking to them. I realized in the past that I let way too many leads just die or slip through the cracks. You have holes that need to be plugged. So kind of the way I look at it is, if the audience right now is a boat, it has many holes. If you make the audience bigger without plugging the holes, you're just making the holes bigger. So you're going to keep sinking. There are holes that need to be plugged in order for audience growth to actually have effects. It's like when you want to bulk, right? If you are fat and then you start bulking, you're really not going to see much changes because you haven't addressed the main issue, which is you're fat. But if you lean down and then you bulk, that's when you really start getting like some awesome results. So the boat analogy helps me to be like help people who think maybe some more followers and then this system is really going to work, right? Have you heard of that from your clients? Just a little bit more followers. And bro, when I get to 23K, I'm telling you, this shit is going to explode. No, it won't, because you haven't plugged in the holes. Your audience size never beats audience efficiency. This is why there's people with 5,000 followers making $250,000 a month.
Yeah.
People with 20K making $260,000 a month because they understand the game of efficiency, not size.
That would be a really cool graph, kind of like increased difficulty as your audience grows and you still can't monetize, like a cool time to follower ratio. Have you had any clients ask you, because this was a question that came up in my mind when you said that, is, for example, they have 300,000 followers and they don't know how to monetize. And you said, as time goes on, the bigger your audience gets, it becomes even harder to monetize if you're building it the wrong way. Has any of them asked you if they should, you know, start a new account, or do you tell them that, or has anyone had to, or are you able to turn it around, right? Like, you're at 300,000, you can now go from 300 to 400 and build 100,000 new good followers. How do you usually like go about that problem? Because I'm sure it's come up.
Yeah, usually when people have so much of an account size and it's like nothing, I think like they're not getting clients from it. It's either one or two cases, I think. Number one is you grew it just based on platitudes and hustle mindset shit. In that case, I recommend start another one and retweet the fuck out of your new one. Like, just being real, right?
Yeah.
What do you do if you're not? So maybe you build the audience around you. You have 10, 20,000 followers and it's like you can't get clients. In my opinion, people get there because they're asking people to marry them before dating them. It's because they've only been selling way too high ticket stuff. And the audience has grown deaf to that because it's too much of a commitment and they've said it too many times. In that case, what I like to do is introduce prospect inertia and ask the audience out on a date. So instead of selling a really big thing like the program you've been selling all this time, you sell a smaller component of the program. You unbundle your IP. So you sell smaller components so that people will see the value in the bigger side of the component. I call it prospect inertia. Prospects in motion tend to stay in motion, but if the push is too big in the beginning, they won't move. You got to introduce a smaller payment. It's got to be a payment. It can't be free because people don't respect free, but it has to be a small payment so that you can get the ball rolling. And if you introduce small things, people start buying the big things. And it does require 4 or 5 months for the audience to understand that they can't disrespect you anymore. But when it hits, it hits.
Interesting. Yeah. I think another thing I've seen too is just from who I've seen in the space, I feel like a lot of times people will grow in that case where you said like 10 or 20,000 followers. Like, a lot of times they have this good audience and the reason that they don't monetize, they're just not even having any conversations. Like, they're not even, it's like, they're to us, since we're more experienced, we're like, are you even trying? But like, to them, it's like, it hasn't clicked where it's like, you could literally just talk to your audience more, just send the emails and make the offers and send the DMs and have the conversations and you make the sales. Do you find that any people just literally aren't doing the part, like the monetizing part? Like they think it's just going to like come through the profile link. People are just going to click and buy everything. Like people aren't actually sending the emails and the DMs to close the sales. Because I've seen that a lot where it's like, because it's a math thing, right? It's like, you know, if you send a certain amount of emails, you'll get a certain amount of workshop signups every month. And you know, like the numbers. But I feel like a lot of people don't realize like you could just kind of plug in an equation, figure out your capacity, figure out how many you're going to get, et cetera.
I think they're just afraid, man. I think like they're, but the one thing they're afraid of is what if I lose goodwill with the audience? Well, then you don't make money, but you're not making money anyway, bro. So what do you think you should do?
I mean, this
do?
Is crazy. Like, I don't know if you knew this, but back in the day, I was doing, this is 2021, I was doing Facebook drop shipping. I made like $7,000 in like 3 months. It's good for me back then. But on the side, I was making TikToks about side hustle, like side hustle TikToks. Best side hustle 2021, Facebook drop shipping. They're still on my TikTok. They got like hundreds of thousands of views. I would go TikTok live and talk about Facebook drop shipping. And I did all this stuff. I made like one or two Facebook drop shipping videos. And I was like, okay, I have traction here. I went and I made the course, a Facebook drop shipping course. I think I made it $197 or $297. I ended up selling like seven or eight of them. But even that, and I didn't know back then because I wasn't like this info marketer that I am now. But back then, I made like seven sales through just like going TikTok live and making a YouTube video and like making it on ClickFunnels and just kind of making an offer like twice. And I made like seven or eight sales for my Facebook dropshipping course in 2021. Ended up not going through with it because I just kind of wasn't that good at Facebook dropshipping anymore. And I was like, I don't want to live, this like facade where I made $7,000 once and I'm teaching people to make $7,000. I didn't want to live that life. So I just shut it down. But the lesson from that story is if you just make offers, you make money. It's like make more offers, make more money. It's super basic, but you know, some people need to hear it.
Yeah, I tell people that. JK, like, do you recommend daily? And I say, making more offers will never result in you making less money. They're like, that makes sense. Also, by the way, Marcos, how dare you not lie to make money? Don't you know how this business works? You got to fake your lifestyle, bro. Fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah, what I should have done is I made 7K once, take all those screenshots, run ads, Lambo lifestyle, and sell it indefinitely to this day for 3 years off the 7K I made once.
Dude, don't forget to use the Latino angle, right? How my parents were fucking immigrants, you know?
It's rags like to riches.
Your rags to riches, you know, from, you know, they call me papi now, shit like that. You know, you gotta put some sauce.
Is it surprising to you that stuff still works to an extent? Like the market the market's more aware for sure, but even still there's still a subsegment of audience members that are still falling for the same tricks every single time for the last decade. That doesn't surprise you at all?
Nah, it's because I have this intrinsic belief that 99% of people are losers, so I just accept it. Like,
you just lost your faith in humanity.
I have extremely low expectations of people. Extremely low. Like, somebody doesn't shit themselves today, great job, dude. Like, you did awesome, right? So this is why I have, like, really, maybe this is just the audience speaking, but, like, it kind of gives you thick skin because then you understand, oh, they're one of those. I shouldn't pay my attention to them because then that deviates, like, all the attention you can put into the actual winners. So I believe losers are real. And I believe losers will always be real. And I also believe that losers are the majority of people. So no, it doesn't surprise me. Sometimes I forget it. And then I get disappointed from something or someone. And I think again, right, I have a 1% chance of finding a winner. This is normal because everybody's a loser.
Do you think that quote where it's like, some are 90% of people or 50% of people don't have an internal dialogue. Do you think that's true or do you think that's BS?
I don't know. Well, let me ask you this, bro. When I say apple, do you see an apple?
No.
Me neither.
I saw your hand.
Me neither. So, like, people are, like, wild that you guys don't see an apple? And, like, really high IQ people have said it. And I'm like, Marcos, are we dumb? What's going on?
I think my I don't know. As you can see, we're past minute 40, so it's time to start getting autistic.
Oh, now we can get stupid.
Yeah, now you guys got the value. We're done with that shit. Now
yeah,
This is for the loyal audience that's either on a walk or on the treadmill, and they just want to like smile a little bit at the jokes because we're just put the boys. I think my idea is that, or my observation is that people with really high IQs don't really say smart things. They actually say simple things. And I think people with, I think mid-curvers say high IQ things in quotations. So like the people who are saying that are typically mid-curvers, and the high IQ guys like Elon Musk is like, haha, meme. He's just like, haha, I played Diablo. I don't know if you've seen this. And I made this tweet. It's like, I run a business, but I also will play video games and watch TV and like all this stuff. But I find that true. Even like, look at Elon Musk just tweeted like, just I'm ranked 69 on in the world at Duo Diablo's video game. This guy's like, he's like 100 billionaire. He's like, yeah, I'm top 100 at Diablo in the world. It's like, but the mid curvers are like, you must go monk mode. You must.
Yeah, good call. No, you know what? That's a high IQ take. Fuck yeah, Marcos. Let's go. At least for now, it's proven that half of the Likes and Cash podcast staff is high IQ. Let's fucking go.
Let me tell I played Minecraft for like 3 hours last night, man. Okay.
Dude, Andrew Gazdecki, I think I told this story again, but I'm going to say it again. Andrew Gazdecki, the startup, microacquire.com, he had like an 8-figure exit, I think, and now he runs like a huge business again. He's also ranked top 100 in the world in Madden, something like that. So yeah.
That's going to be me in FIFA. After my first exit, I'm going for top 100 FIFA. I don't know if you guys know this. This is my humble brag of the day. My record on head-to-head seasons on FIFA right now is 40-2. And the only time I lost is because I was being Al Nassr, which is the Saudi Arabian team of Ronaldo. They're terrible. Don't use them in FIFA. But I'm going for it.
Dude, I would have bragged too, man. Like, I don't have... Okay, so this is me being petty. But my favorite video game is Super Smash Brothers. I don't have the last one, the Smash Brothers Ultimate for Nintendo Switch. But I watch videos of it daily. And my friends had it, and we'd play maybe like an hour in college for like a few months. Bro, I got like super into it, and I started beating, like I beat like one guy that was ranked like top 10 in my country. Like I beat him, and I don't have the game. I'm like, dude, like this is so addicting, right? Like the notion that business owners are addicts, they just get addicted to business and not to something else. 100% true. Fully agree.
And then they eventually, after they make it, they go back to the original addiction, but they just learned better discipline. That's pretty much
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
That's
it's
exactly
like, it's like
what
a
I
hero
did.
That comes back to his own town.
Yeah. I sold all my video game consoles for like the first year of business, but then I learned discipline, moderation, systems, all that stuff. And now I'm like, okay, now I can actually trust myself and I'm still amazing at the game. So it's like, are you a fighting game guy or is it just specifically Super Smash?
It's just specifically Super Smash because Super Smash allows you to not only win, but you can win with disrespect. Like you can win. But you can like really humiliate your opponent. I love that about the game. I love it. It sends a message, bro. When I used to beat people, I didn't have the game, but I beat them. You know what I used to say? I used to tell them, you're pretty good, man. I think you should buy the game.
So you have one more person to destroy. You know what? I know exactly what you're talking about. I played when I was my last AT annual training in the Army. It's like 2 weeks in the field. Not actually in the field, but in like barracks, someone brought Super Smash and we all would play Super Smash at night in the barracks. And he was humiliating me. Like I would be whatever, Pikachu or whatever. He would just hit me. I wouldn't get a single hit on him. I couldn't even move. I'd be like 4 feet in the air, just getting my ass whooped for like 45 seconds. And then I would die. And I'm like, okay. it was so unfun for me.
Yeah. When you play with somebody who's like really good at Smash, it feels like it's a single player game. Like it feels like they're just ridiculing you.
We got to have a Super Smash live stream on this channel one day.
Oh, we'll do that. We'll do that.
I don't know if you know my channel. I have old lives of chess and like a couple other video games that I streamed a few times. I'm definitely going to bring them back one day.
Is this live?
They were, yeah, YouTube lives. The recordings
are
there.
Oh, but like, is it, I mean, is it still up?
Oh, yeah, they're still up. I have one of Cyberpunk and a few of chess. And then I have old ones of Apex, but I don't know if they're up.
Well, cool. You know, I think that adds a lot of like depth to a brand. Like, you know, talking about business for the last few minutes because, you know, fuck it. But I think adding your own unique things and your own unique likes actually adds a lot to the brand. Like, I recently posted about how food in Europe, like, just makes me feel so much better than food in Latin America. And I was checking over the likes, and it's like people who make like really good money. And I'm like, oh, is posting about Polish cheese whale bait? No, it's the fact that you're open about that. You're like, this is what I am into. It shows non-neediness, which is important.
Just submit it, bro. Pesto works.
I didn't say it didn't. Bro, I had ciabatta bread with pesto. Awesome. I love it.
Was
it?
Oh.
Yeah, it's so good. It's like ridiculous.
I'm so excited to go to Europe. I'm so excited.
Are you
going to Italy? I'm going to Italy for a month in October, but I'm also going to London and Ireland next month.
Nice. Did you know
that? Remember? Because your visa.
My bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
did you know that? You know how you go on supermarkets? At least it's in Latin America. I don't know in America, but you buy rice or bread and it says enriched or fortified. Have you seen that?
I have seen it, but I don't know what it means.
Yeah, so it's this chemical that they spray on like rice and bread. And it's like a lot of 44-something% of people can't process that shit. I'm in my Huberman arc. Okay, so 45% of people can't process that. Now, that chemical is actually banned in Italy. Like, there's a bunch of things you can't do that, right? So you know how some people say that I have pasta in the U.S. and it messes me up? But they have pasta and bread in Italy, and it passed like it's okay. So have a good time, man. Get some pasta.
I have a friend who's gluten free who can eat gluten in Italy. It's crazy. Like, they're celiac and they can just go and eat. I don't understand it. I mean, I do understand it, but I just like can't really wrap my head around it. I'm like, man, okay, fine. I'll move to Italy. Fine,
dude. The Euro bark, man. I'm telling you, it was the move for me. It's awesome.
I'm very spontaneous. Don't be surprised if at the end of this year, I'm just like, yeah, we're doing 6 months in Italy.
Fuck yeah, man. Fuck yeah. If you want to come to Poland, we got an extra room, man. I'm actually in it. Like, you'll be
all right.
Yeah, no problem. I got you, bro. But yeah, I love Europe. I love being here. I love this thing. But good podcast, lighthearted. Get some game.
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
See you in the next one.
Now that I'm aware of those time segments that I said, I'm going to accidentally do it every time. At the last 10 minutes of every podcast is going to be so bad.
Well, you know, I wish you luck on your non-short form journey. I don't want to see you being held hostage by the camera.
Next short form is going to actually, you're going to see a little tip of a gun in the corner of the screen.
Well, it feels like that. But, you know, you're an awesome writer, bro. Double down on that.
Aw, thanks.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Let's hold hands to say goodbye to the podcast so everybody can see that. There you go. Goodbye.